The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, December 16th, 2022. My name is Emma Vigeland, in for Sam Cedar, and this is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live, steps, from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Ryan Grimm, DC Bureau Chief for The Intercept, and later in the show, Lance from the Serfs, as well as the band Binder, Matt Binder.
From the underground.
Yes. Elon said, no doxing, meaning...
What do you want me to say?
Don't post publicly available information.
You are unpersoned.
Goodbye. Congress has passed a short-term spending bill, giving them more time to craft the larger package before the holiday break. However, last-minute efforts to defuse the debt ceiling bomb that's coming next December, now that Republicans have taken back the House, those efforts have stalled. So, Democrats have essentially abandoned their push to raise the debt limit, meaning Republicans will once again hold the economy hostage next year if they don't get what they want. Cuts to your Social Security and Medicare, for example. The military budget has been approved with the removal of the COVID vaccine mandate for troops. It's also a $45 billion increase. And here's an unrelated thought. Bernie Sanders' College for All plan from the presidential election was $48 billion a year.
Yeah, but then young kids wouldn't be sort of gently coerced into becoming troops.
That's true. They're actually not as disparate thoughts.
Directly related.
The House has passed a bill that could theoretically pave the way for Puerto Rican statehood or independence, whatever they would determine in a referendum, but needs to pass 60 votes in the Senate because of the filibuster, so it's DOA. A Trump-appointed federal judge has issued a stay on the Biden administration's attempts to end his predecessor's cruel Remain in Mexico policy. Elon Musk has banned several journalists, including our very own Matt Binder, from Twitter, for posting a police statement on Elon Musk, which Musk decided was doxing. Starbucks, yeah, go.
No, go ahead.
Starbucks workers at 100 stores nationwide have begun a national three-day walkout, the largest action yet by the union, which has grown exponentially in a year. Three men have been convicted in the plot to kidnap Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer over her COVID policies. The Biden administration has placed severe economic restrictions on Chinese semiconductor companies, ramping up tensions for no discernible reason except jingoism. This is the true bipartisan consensus in Washington. And lastly, a white police officer in Texas who shot and killed Atitania Jefferson in her home was found guilty of manslaughter. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, everybody. It's Casual Friday. It's the last Friday before the last Friday of the year. Actually, well, we'll still have the best ofs that week, but that's our last week in studio before January. Mm-hmm. And Sam is out this week, as you may know. He'll be back on Monday. Very eager to hear about the cruise, it must be going well because we haven't heard from him except I saw he tweeted in support of Matt Binder. So
yeah,
we'll be having Binder on to talk about what happened.
I think we can surmise it's going well because otherwise we would have got some dispatches through Coconut Mail that you know he's got a migraine.
He's
stuck in his room.
He's chose to confine himself to his cabin. But we have not received that. We have a lot to get to. Ryan's going to come on. Talk about what happened with the standoff between Bernie Sanders and the White House on the war in Yemen, the House passing the Press Act, and more. And then later we will have Matt Binder on to talk about him being banned, plus Lance from the Serfs. So stay tuned for that. But first, as I mentioned in headlines, Starbucks workers across the country are staging a 3-day strike. And that strike starts today. That makes it the longest action for Starbucks workers in the history of Starbucks. Over 1,000 baristas are expected to participate in this work stoppage at over 100 stores. And this is just another instance of Starbucks Workers United, which has won union election after union election. The numbers on that are staggering. I think they've won at around 270 locations in a year. And it doesn't, there's no signs of it stopping, which is why we get these panicked press, or not press conferences, but I guess internal
yeah, so like
meetings,
investor or whatever,
yeah,
management
with Howard
meetings
Schultz.
Where he's like, hey, guess what, guys? You like NFTs? Well, wait until December when people are really going to love NFTs.
Yeah, I'm so glad that these Starbucks workers didn't settle for the NFT over the wage increases. That aged pretty well.
I'm a digital native.
So they're staging this action. And here is a TikTok from Starbucks workers speaking about this action and encouraging everybody, do not buy Starbucks gift cards this holiday season.
Holiday season, everybody's buying Starbucks gift cards for parents, teachers, coaches, whatever. People are buying them. This year, unionized Starbucks baristas are asking you to please not buy Starbucks gift cards this year. This is because Starbucks has launched a scorched earth union busting campaign against organizing baristas, including everything from firing baristas to shutting down stores. And the federal government is prosecuting Starbucks for over 900 violations of federal labor law. They are refusing to bargain with us in good faith. And so please, this year we are asking that you do not buy Starbucks gift cards. Use this opportunity to go to your local coffee shop, support them, support literally any other coffee shop, just not Starbucks this year.
Well said.
At SB Workers United on TikTok.
The amount of money that I saw in these times wrote this up, that this fiscal year, Starbucks made $212 million from leftover money on Starbucks gift cards. And they just, I mean, that is a
hey,
a
that's on top of
money
the wage
maker.
Theft.
Exactly. Oh, boy, it's gravy for those executives.
It's like frosting on frosting.
Some of that leftover money could have gone to wage increases, right? I mean, I'm not an accountant, but that's my sense of things if I were to do the math the top of my head.
It's got to go to the NFT research project.
So, a reminder, just support these Starbucks workers. If you have the opportunity, don't go to Starbucks, especially during this time period, I would say. Go to another coffee shop, down the road, whatever. But the solidarity with these workers across the country, because this is a massive action.
Yeah.
And in the midst of just historic actions at the largest strike in the history of public universities, I believe, happening ongoing at University of California, and just a number of historic milestones that we have to show solidarity with, respect for, stand side by side with these workers who are striking. So that is that. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We have a word from one of our sponsors. Sam will be delivering that message to you. And after that, we will be joined by Ryan Grimm.
Hey, folks. This episode is brought to you by our favorite sponsor, sunsetlakesabade.com. Use the coupon code LEFTISBEST. You get 20% off. It's holidays, folks. You know what that means? Family. You know what that means? Maybe a little more stress than you want. How do I handle it? Well, not only do I use Sunset Lake Sabade in tincture form to go to sleep, not only do I use Sunset Lake gummies with melatonin to go to sleep on other days, I'd like to mix it up a little bit, but I will also, when I know I'm having to deal with family or I'm feeling maybe a little bit stressed or I just want to chill, I will eat some sour Sunset Lake gummies with Sabade only, or sometimes Sunset Lake Sabade's with gummies with a little bit of THC. But you can also bring some Sabade fudge to people for the holidays. You can have some Sabade-infused coffee for the holidays. Or maybe after a holiday dinner, sit back, you want to have some Sabade smokables. They have pre-rolls, they have keef, they have flour, all sorts of products. It's a great company. They have given tens of thousands of dollars to issues you care about. We did a thing with them this year for Planned Parenthood. We've done things in the past for immigrant relief and around the country. They have supported to the tune of thousands of dollars food pantries in Vermont, where they're from. Also, the Innocence Project and Give Directly, and they're a great company. Movement partners, they give to strike funds, and they also practice great farming practices, regenerative farming, integrated pest management. All of their products are third-party tested. You can see the results on their website, or when you buy it, they'll send it to you. And they're a mostly employee-owned company. $20 minimum wage, just a great company all around. SunsetLakeSabade.com. Use the coupon code LEFTISBEST. You get 20% off. Check it out right now. Do yourself or your friends or your family a favor and check it out. All right. Now, back to the show with Emma.
We are back, and we are joined by Ryan Grimm, friend of the show, DC bureau chief at The Intercept. Ryan, thanks for coming back on.
Yeah, it's good to be here. How you doing, Emma?
I'm doing all right. You know, I'm still on Twitter, unlike some of our friends. But maybe that's not a good thing, honestly.
No, it's not. It's clearly we're the ones that he's not afraid of if we're still there.
I know. That's the point. We're not adversarial enough. Yeah. Well, thanks again for coming on. You did a lot of great reporting this week on Yemen and the War Powers Resolution that Bernie Sanders was trying to pass. Can you give our audience a bit of a rundown of the events of, was it Wednesday? How basically the Biden administration was whipping votes behind the scenes, mm-hmm. trying to make it not obvious that they were doing so, and then Bernie ended up pulling the resolution. How'd that start? How did that
happen? The backstory, you kind of have to go back to the week before when we were working on a story about how the time to do this resolution was actually going to expire if Bernie Sanders didn't move, you know, with some haste to get it onto the floor during the lame duck. And then with House Republicans taking over, you know, the chances of it getting done are not nil, but it does get much harder because the House Republican leadership is against it, even if there's a block of kind of House Republican isolationists that are cool with it. And so we ended up kind of getting my colleague Dan Bogusław got Bernie in the hallway, and Bernie was like, I'm going to do it. Maybe next week. And so then we reported that Bernie had said, hopefully next week, he's going to do this. He's going to do the Yemen resolution. And then by the end of the week, he said Tuesday night, I'm going to do it Tuesday night. And so it was kind of a scramble on the part of both the White House and the 100 and seven or so kind of advocacy groups that have been pushing for the, and supporting this war powers resolution. So yes, yeah, so they everybody seemed to be flat-footed. Bernie didn't seem to have done a whole ton of kind of prep work with his colleagues. He had been busy. He was fighting the Manchin's dirty deal that he was trying to get into the NDAA. He was leading the charge on the railroad workers. And so I think Yemen kind of was backburnered. The group set a couple days to kind of, pull things together. And then the White House started, as you said, on Tuesday morning, really pushing hard against it, circulating a bunch of talking points, arguing for why, even if Democratic senators had voted for it in 2019 under Trump, why they should vote against it last time or this time. And so Sanders went to the floor right before the vote and said, I'm going to talk with the administration and see if we can get to some type of compromise language. If we don't, then I'm going to be back here. Now, the question of whether he gets back to the floor in time to move it through the House is an open one, and it looks like that's going to be very difficult. I've heard there is some optimism that there's going to be actual work done, but we'll see. The cynical view would be that the White House was able to shut him down and will be able to now drag it into the next year when they can rely on Republicans to block it.
Mm. And the context of this all is that the I don't know if it was exactly the same, but a Yemen war powers resolution was passed bipartisanly under Trump. And when Democrats were able to brand it as Trump's war, they were united in opposition, and Trump ended up vetoing it. But now that Biden's in office, different story.
And that was impressive political jujitsu, because the war actually started under Obama. So Democrats were able then to say, yeah, okay, actually, this is actually Trump's war. Trump made it easy for them to do that by being so obsequious and over the top about the fealty toward Saudi, rather than doing it like normal United States presidents, where the corrupt bargain is kind of out in the open, but not that flamboyantly displayed. Remember, Trump even had MBS in the Oval Office, and he was showing off. Did you remember this? He was showing off all these posters of the weapons.
No.
With the price tags.
I don't remember that.
It's incredible. He's got these.
We're going to look that up now.
It looks like he had some intern print them out on poster board, like just before the meeting. And you've got Mohammed bin Salman sitting there in the chair, who is a deeply awkward individual to begin with. And then you've got Trump just like relentlessly bullying him with this, showing him these posters, like, $422 million a picture of some missiles, and then pulls up another one, $586 million a picture of a jet. You're just going on and on about the beautiful weapons that, they're selling to MBS. That's always supposed to be the subtext of the foreign policy relationship, not
Trump doesn't understand subtext. He also I've never seen somebody who loves a like physical visual aid more than he does.
Yeah.
Loves
these
poster
beautiful
bombs.
Yeah. The burgers, these beautiful bombs, these beautiful cluster munitions.
Stacks of paper. Right.
Look at the wings on this jet.
We have the visual, and speaking of visual aids, we have the pictures here that you were referring to on the screen. There you go.
Incredible.
Pretty amazing.
So Trump made it easy for Democrats to say that this was Trump's war. There was a slight difference between the 2019 resolution and this one, basically. And Chris Murphy described it really well on Mehdi Hassan's show on Tuesday morning. And getting Chris Murphy to come out and say he was going to vote for this resolution was a big deal. And that counts as like a significant step forward, because he's the chair of the subcommittee that oversees this. He's a guy that like a lot of the rest of the Democratic senators look to for guidance on what they're supposed to think about Yemen.
He's sometimes surprisingly good on issues like this.
And sometimes surprisingly bad on this one. Like he's been both places, and so he was surprised. He was good. He was really good on this one on Tuesday. And the point that he made was, we have effectively restricted through the last war powers resolution, even though it was vetoed. There were then negotiations that came out of it. We've restricted about 90 to 95% of U.S. support for Saudi's war effort over there, and in fact, the Saudis haven't dropped a bomb there in nine months. There's a ceasefire expired October 1st, but they haven't kind of reinstigated hostilities yet, but there have been no progress made on actual negotiations, you know, to make a lasting peace. And so Murphy said, look, this resolution takes the last 5 to 10% of our support for their offensive capacity, their ability to bomb Yemen, and it takes that out. And he's like, we need to do that. And basically what he's talking about, it would ban all logistical support. And the logistical support means maintaining the airplanes and that sort of thing. If the U.S. stops, it's pretty clever. Like if the U.S., the way that we've set up our empire, if we stop servicing these airplanes, these fleets are grounded basically mm-hmm. like within a day or two, because they don't have the technical capacity, and we haven't shared the technical capacity of how to fix them all. So it's quite clever. Like you get you spend those hundreds of millions of dollars that Trump just put up on that placard there. You get the plane, but you don't learn how to drive it, basically, or you don't learn how to drive it more than a couple of days. So you remain dependent on the U.S. And so Murphy's saying it's time to pull the mechanics. So
well, yeah. And for context, recent reports say at least 11,000 children have died in this conflict. The spread of disease, malnutrition, mass death. Yeah. I mean, it's been that UN brokered ceasefire expired 2 months ago. And essentially what it seems like the White House's argument was, which is like, shush, 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 shush. This actually, a resolution that would promote peace would increase the violence, which is so, yeah. I mean, really what they're worried about is another situation where MBS holds the oil reserves hostage and gas prices go up, even though the midterms have already passed.
I think that's a big part of it. And the unspoken kind of military point that they're making with that claim. So you're like, well, how on earth could this increase the violence? The Houthis are winning this war, you know, so significantly that the worry among Saudi supporters is that if Saudi loses that last 5% support from the U.S. military, that the Houthis will steamroll through the rest of Yemen and would also be able to like regularly target Saudi oil fields and other Saudi infrastructure. That Saudi Arabia started this war. And in fact, the defense minister at the time was Mohammed bin Salman. He thought it was going to be like a several week bombing affair, like every goon that starts a war. They think it's going to last a couple months and be done. Here we are 7 years later. They went from thinking they were going to win this thing in a couple weeks to like being at risk of losing it, and not just it looks like they're certainly going to lose it in Yemen. But if it weren't for the geopolitics of the situation, it looks like the Houthis could actually probably just straight up beat them. Wow. Which is insane. Now they can't, because they can't beat the United States, and we're not going mm-hmm. to allow, like, the United States is not going to allow something like that to happen. But that's how badly they've been bested, kind of on the battlefield. And so I think what they're saying is the only thing maintaining the fragile truce they're arguing is that Saudi Arabia still maintains a tiny bit of capacity for kind of bombs, and that's from the U.S. And then it all gets tangled up in the Ukraine. Russia war as well, because Iran is, you know, the financial and supply backer and supplier of the Houthis, and also is now intricately involved with Russia in the war there in Ukraine.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Like, what is Iran's financial backing proportional at all to what the United States is providing? Because another, like, frankly, gross trick that the Biden administration did at the start of their time in office was to say, we're going to end offensive support for offensive operations in this war, which is just window dressing, because every invader also classifies their mm-hmm. offensive military operations as defensive. So there's no there was nothing there when they made that proclamation.
Right. It's like, we're going to prevent our Department of Offense from supporting the Saudi Arabia's war effort. Now the Department of Defense, hey, they can do it, because they're just doing defensive things. And yeah, like the U.S. had a Department of War up through World War II. It was literally called the War Department. And that's how you knew that we were kind of an isolationist country that was kind of a backbencher when it came to the imperial game. When we became kind of one of the two superpowers, and when we were finally picking up our imperial game and pushing and expanding around the globe, that's when we changed the name to Department of Defense. So you're right. Like Mohammed Salman was like, okay, we'll end offensive operations. We're bombing these school buses in a defensive way. It's, you know, we're defending ourselves. Mm. And look, they just sent a drone our way. So now we have to defend ourselves with a carpet bombing campaign. So you're right. Like all kinds of semantic games end up getting played there. But the role of Iran is a fascinating one because, you know, certainly Russia would love if it could persuade Iran to persuade the Houthis to take some Saudi oil fields offline, which would then, you know, massively spike oil prices, which would be devastating to Ukraine and huge for Russia, because then Russia would be one of the main suppliers of oil in the world for a couple months. They would need to relax sanctions. Like Russia would feel like it was in a catbird seat if they could get that done. And so I think these are some of the things that the White House is balancing, but won't really say out loud or have become part of this, which is another good reason to not have 7-year wars just lingering in the background, because you never know when you might be waging another proxy war.
But what's hilarious is that
it starts complicating your effort there.
It's not hilarious, but what is also notable is that MBS is developing a relationship with Vladimir Putin that has become
he's playing both sides of it as well.
Yeah,
because he sees the geopolitics too. That he's like, oh, the thing that is preventing Russia from really raking in money for its oil is the fact that we have oil that we're able to sell at such vast quantities, and it doesn't take a genius to then think, what if Russia figured out a way to do something about that? So I do think that explains a significant amount of Mohammed bin Salman's overtures to Russia. Like, you don't be nice to us. You know, we're not.
Right. Well, I mean, he's flexing his muscle, and it is, for all the Republican talk about how the Biden administration is weak on like foreign policy and they'll do that dance with Democrats, this is a real instance where that is the case. That's certainly the case. But not in the way that they describe it. I also wanted to touch on what you wrote, I guess, yesterday afternoon and have been reporting on, the Press Act, which is just passed the House. And on my initial reading of it, I was skeptical that it had any future in the Senate because it was blocked by Tom Cotton. I guess in the lame duck, they could bring it up again, right? So what is this Press Act and what are its prospects?
So basically it has to get into the omnibus, you know, spending package that is being wrapped up over the next, you know, week or so, or that will get finished in the lame duck. Because it has already passed the House, that gives them a lot of credibility over in the Senate to say, look, it was unanimous, it was bipartisan. My understanding is that so Chuck Grassley has a lot of input over this omnibus piece of legislation. My understanding was that he was not just open to it, but kind of supportive of including it. But that changed with Tom Cotton's objection. And so the question then becomes, if Grassley doesn't want this to be included, how badly does he not want it to be included? Mm. And does Schumer think that he can still get 60 votes for the entire omnibus package if he goes against Grassley's and Cotton's wishes on this issue? Now, Cotton is probably going to be a no because he's cantankerous and has all kinds of like objections to all kinds of things. So that's
and probably
a
fascist, so he hates the press. So
he does, in fact, hate the press. In fact, in 2011, he rose to viral fame, like as a commander in Iraq. He wrote a letter to the New York Times saying that my colleague James Risen, Eric Lichtblau, and one other journalist ought to be put in prison. He said, I hope that by the time I come home from Iraq, you're in prison. Times didn't run that letter. It ran in like Red State or some other, you know, right wing paper, and it went viral on the right. That's how Tom Cotton like got his career started, like calling for the actual journalists to be put in prison. So 11 years later, he's still doing the same thing on the Senate floor. So the question is, can Schumer keep together 60 votes? You know, how much does McConnell care? How much does Grassley care about this? I think if it can be isolated to Tom Cotton's crazy, then I think people will be like, the Republicans will say, I'm not necessarily for this, but I'm not going to hold up the whole omnibus over it. But if it becomes like a partisan thing, then I think it wouldn't get in. But it, I think it has a very, very good chance of getting in. Like, it's a live fight right now. And after we get off, I'm going to post this video, and I could send it to you guys too, of Tom Cotton's speech, which I included on Counterpoints Friday. But there's a particular part of his speech opposing it, mm-hmm. where he says, you know, during the Vietnam War, journalists published, you know, the Pentagon Papers in order to turn the public against the Vietnam War. And therefore, like, you should oppose this. Like, he's literally using the Pentagon Papers as an example of the kind of thing he once criminalized. And I think that that's insane enough that you can isolate him as a marginal figure on this. I think most Republicans would not be fully listening to his speech and hear Pentagon Papers and be like, okay, he's going to say something, you know, praiseworthy about the role of the press and whistleblowers. And then it takes this sharp right turn. And you're like, wait. He's saying that. Wait, did he just say that because the Pentagon Papers were published that we need to criminalize all of this? Like, that's not anybody's understanding currently of what our relationship is to the First Amendment or to a free press. The more that the argument of his circulates, I think the less chance he has of carrying the day. But no, it's easy to block things. So it's still possible. I'm sure it also depends on how hard he works it. Like, if Cotton's like burning up the phones to his colleagues, then usually they're going to be like, well, okay, fine. I don't care. So I'll do you this favor. Mm-hmm. No, we'll see.
But it could be just him making a stand. Like, he's trying to brand himself for whenever he chooses to make his presidential run. What does the bill really entail? Right. I mean, it's press protections. But would this be meaningful in?
Yeah, it would be. Yeah. It would be actually shockingly meaningful. So if you take Risen's case, that Cotton was complaining about, Risen, the Bush administration, then the Obama administration threatened him with jail for not revealing his sources. They ended up, they did put Judith Miller in jail for not revealing her sources. And they do this to journalists a lot. They say, like, they subpoena your sources, and then you resist the subpoena, and you exhaust all your legal avenues. Risen was able to draw it out for like 4 years and without going to jail, and they eventually dropped it. But other journalists have exhausted their legal resistance to the subpoena, and then you get hit with contempt indefinitely. Mm-hmm. In fact, Chelsea Manning was thrown in prison for this. Like, the second time that she went in, it was because she was refusing to testify against Assange. Which they didn't need her testimony anyway. It was just malicious to just throw her back into prison even after Obama had commuted her sentence. And they eventually let her out because she was able to persuade the judge that this was a matter of principle for her, and she was not going to give, she was not going to budge. And so at that point, it becomes punishment rather than coercion. But like, right now, under the law, a contempt citation can be issued to a journalist to coerce them through prison, through jail, to reveal who their sources are. And you can't get out of jail until you reveal your sources. What this bill would say is you can't do that. Like, don't, it's illegal for you to do that. And it's also illegal for you to go around the journalist and go to big tech and try to get the information from their devices. Similarly, like, that is protected. So they carve out like one, basically just one exception, which is if there's an imminent threat of some type of serious violence or terrorism, then there still has to be a court case. But that's not like that basically almost never happens. It certainly wouldn't have applied in Risen's case. It's really hard to think of a scenario where that actually applies. Those are just like hypotheticals that are made up by people who,
right,
you know, want to like defend torture. Like, what if there's a bomb set off somewhere in New York City and you've caught the terrorist and you have,
right, 20... we're living in a 24 episode. Yes.
Right. But we don't actually live in a 24 episode. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of Assange, just because you brought it up, I saw that Democracy Now! Wrote an open letter encouraging the Biden administration to drop the charges against Julian Assange. They're moving forward with their case. I'm wondering if like there's anything that you've heard on that front in particular, because it seems like they're moving. I mean, in terms of like bipartisan consensus, it's, you know, China hawkery, increase the defense budget, and seemingly now let's go after Julian Assange. What's the update there?
They still are full steam ahead. The best development that I've seen in the last week or so was actually Ari Melber really ripping Merrick Garland for this. Because I think the New York Times, Democracy Now! Is great. Intercept, I think, signed that same letter. Great. But the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Guardian coming out, like they have more weight with the normies in the Department of Justice. Right. And so that was a big step forward. And I think people like Ari Melber, taking it directly to Merrick Garland, like that's kind of their base, like the MSNBC audience and the MSNBC kind of press. And so if you start seeing people like Rachel Maddow, Chris Hayes, Lawrence O'Donnell, Ari Melber, who all are, you know, opposed to this prosecution, but haven't made huge, they're not like campaigning on it basically.
Yeah.
But if they started raising more of a stink, I think you could start to see some movement, because, you know, when they initially wanted to prosecute Assange back under the Obama administration, the reason they didn't is what they called the New York Times problem. They're like, how can we prosecute Assange without prosecuting the New York Times? And we can't prosecute the New York Times because it's the New York Times and we're not going to do that. But Trump didn't care. He went for it anyway. And so bringing back that spirit of fear that the Obama administration had, that we can't go after like the press, like that's what we claim to stand for. Bringing that back is the only hope.
Yeah. Let's just turn to the Fed here, as kind of our last topic before we have to let you go. Although maybe I'll ask you to talk about Twitter just briefly. But so these Fed rate increases, now it's the seventh increase this year. Jay Powell was like almost gleeful in saying that unemployment is going to go up next year. And they have been incredibly bullish on increasing the rate, trying to drive inflation down to 2%, even if all other economic indicators are decent and such drastic changes are eventually going to hurt regular people. They've plowed ahead. And I'm immensely concerned about what the next year is going to bring.
Yeah, and you're seeing like core inflation rates coming down pretty significantly. You're seeing the rate of inflation coming down. Like the slowing of the economy, a couple of things. The economy seems to be slowing a little bit. You have supply chain problems working themselves out, partly because more people at work, we're not in the middle of a pandemic, and also because there was so much money in being able to ship things quickly that, in the old way that the market works, like they flooded a bunch of shipping containers and other logistics solutions to the problem. So the supply chains are working better. But what's also happened is that people are going out more. During the pandemic, people were just buying too much crap.
Mm-hmm.
Like so much, and they weren't going out at all. So if you're not spending any money at bars and restaurants and you're spending it all on Amazon, you're going to clog up the ports, and you're going to create this massive imbalance, which is going to then drive inflation. But that's now people are going out again. People are spreading their money around the economy in the way that they used to in pretty significant ways. And so you're seeing things smooth out, but, I think Powell I think he feels like he stayed with his foot on the monetary gas for too long. And so now it's going to kind of overcompensate in the other direction. Although the best news for workers would be, you know, relatively best news for workers would be that the size of the rate increase was smaller this time. And he has signaled that they're getting smaller. So we're at the beginning of the end. It seems like we're tapering these down. The question is he going to taper them down fast enough, or does he really want to see a lot more pain? Because we're stuck in this situation where there aren't enough workers to fill a lot of these jobs. We're still restricting immigration despite the claims by the right that everybody's just flooding in. And so if you don't have enough workers for these jobs, the only thing you can do is slow down the economy and increase unemployment. But because there's so few people for these jobs, you have to really slow down. That's the real fear. You have to slow down the economy way too much, way more than you otherwise would in order to get the unemployment that Powell wants. You're right. It could get ugly.
But the employment that he wants, I mean, frankly, this is based on a commitment to an antiquated Phillips curve model, which essentially says that if we want to drive down inflation, unemployment has to rise. And that is the Fed orthodoxy. We have not had a Fed chair that has diverged from that opinion, like, in decades or whatever. And The Biden administration keeping Powell on from Trump, frankly, it was a real missed opportunity. And I know it's like anyone you put in there is probably going to have the same ideology, but it could have been an opportunity for some more creative thinking that isn't just like a one trick pony where we raise rates and discipline labor as a way to make sure that people's stock portfolios don't get too hurt.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, because the causes of inflation, some of the causes of inflation were monetary policy over the last decade, like for sure, like crypto probably itself was probably a bubble created by some of that loose monetary policy. But a lot of the causes of inflation were not related to that. They were effectively distortions from the pandemic. And so you need policy to sort those out, like not necessarily monetary policy, like just having fewer, and also like climate related stuff.
Confiscatory taxation would help claw back some money from really wealthy people as well.
Out of circulation. Pull some of it out that way if you want, for sure. Yes, exactly. But also if like California can't produce food, like California used to be able to produce food. If we have bird flu, that is wiping out billions of birds, then that's going to do something about the price of chicken and the price of eggs. That monetary policy is not going to fix. You know, if you don't have enough workers who are working on the docks or on the trains, then firing more workers doesn't solve that problem. So it's a case of the hammer just seeing nails everywhere.
Yeah. All right, lastly here, why haven't we been banned from Twitter yet? I mean, should we try to join that club?
I mean, I think it seems like they all tangentially one way or another linked or referred to something that had something to do with the Elon Jets thing. So it is all people that have been critical of him and don't like him, but it's all reporters who cover him. And in the course of covering him, they just had to... my colleague Michael Lee was suspended. All he did was he referred to the Mastodon account of, now you can't even refer to Mastodon period, but he referred to the Mastodon account of the Elon Jet person. Like, that person's gone. Their account now is over here. That's not posting. Like, that would be like saying it, which they have since extrapolated it to that. Well, if you link anybody to Mastodon, then through Mastodon, you can find the Elon Jets Mastodon account. And through the Elon Jets Mastodon account, you'll find posts that are tracking Elon's jet. Like, that's the logic that he's gotten to. You ought to then just ban Google because it's just as easy to find, actually probably easier. I monkeyed around with Mastodon for like 5 minutes before giving up. Like, it's probably easier to find Elon's jet on Google than it is on Mastodon. even being told what account it is, that thing is just a complete and utter nightmare. So by that rationale, you know, Musk ought to be banning anybody linking to Google.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. And if he's banning Mastodon links, that's just he's going to start maybe banning some competitors because that's limiting the free speech on Twitter.
That's bad evasion.
Right.
It's FTC antitrust law evasion for sure. Like, I'm not so sure that you could do that.
Yeah. We also
when
should
you're,
say
when you're under
you
a
know,
consent decree. Yeah.
Matt Binder of the Majority
that's
Report.
Right. What
also,
did he get nuked for?
He posted the LAPD statement on Elon Musk. He didn't even post his location.
Well, yeah. You know, that would dox the real-time location of the LAPD, maybe.
Perhaps, right? So, I mean, and make them target for assassination. You know,
Binder was doing the assassination coordinates of the LAPD.
Lets you know that they're in L.A.
I mean, honestly, it narrows things down.
Dangerous. Yeah.
They prefer to go by XXPD.
Ryan Grimm, thanks so much for coming on, keeping us updated and all the great stories you're working on over at The Intercept. Anything you want to plug?
I mean, people can check out my Substack, Bad News, if they want. But listen to the Deconstructed podcast that I do through The Intercept and obviously read The Intercept every single day.
Yes, that's necessary.
Necessary reading.
All right. Thanks, Ryan Grimm. Really appreciate it.
You got it.
Have a good weekend.
You too.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by Lance from the Serfs. We're back, and we're joined now by Lance from the Serfs. Welcome back to the show, Lance.
It's an absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you again for having me.
Yeah, well, you've been on a variety of different beats that are of interest to us here at the Majority Report, so we need to have you on to flesh some of this stuff out. I know you've been following this latest, I guess, what swath of Twitter bans over a dozen journalists or around a dozen journalists, prominent ones suspended from Twitter, including Matt Binder of the Majority Report. How did this all unfold last night?
I guess I'll start by saying hashtag free Binder. I want to make sure everyone knows about that. I don't really know a good starting off point, because we could probably talk about this for hours in terms of a petulant man-child turned dictator taking over a social media platform and what effects that has. But it really seems like yesterday his divorce energies had probably peaked. I didn't think we could max saturation, but they have they've exceeded levels previously untold. These are levels of divorce I didn't think were scientifically possible, but here we are.
And, astronomical levels of divorce. He is flooding the zone with divorce vibes.
And as he's assuming his final form, it seems he's very easily upset and has very thin skin. And I cannot for the life of me understand why anyone would almost pay, I would say, close to double the amount of a value of a company if you are scared of becoming the main character every single day. It seems like a strange, nightmarish creation, you know, like an H.P. Lovecraft torture device that only one could make if you were the richest human being on the planet. Sorry, I know that doesn't answer your question. So last night was what I'm and many other people are calling the purge. There was a series of very prominent reporters who have been critical of Elon Musk, who one after the other had their accounts suspended, including, of course, the Majority Report's Matt Binder. And I'm not going to steal his thunder. He's always got his own personal stories to tell, especially about safety to his own family, that I'm sure he'll explain in detail when he comes on. But the accusation coming from Musk is that he at his flight information was tracked by an account called Elon Jet, which used what is considered public information that tracks flight logs to be able to tell people where they're going. Elon Musk had arrived and claimed that because the account had shown in real time where his location was, that someone actually attacked his vehicle and jumped on his car while his children were in the vehicle at the time. Now, the LAPD released a statement saying that no criminal charges have been filed. This is where things get tricky, and this is where, you know, we might go in middle Alex Jones territory here, but at this moment, as close as I can tell, the reason Matt Binder has been taken off the platform is that he, as well as some other people, were reposting the LAPD statement. That was the last tweet that I saw Binder post before he got roasted. And that LAPD statement obviously looks a little bit bad to Elon Musk, who's claiming that he was directly attacked by an individual. And they're saying, well, we're looking into it, but as of now, no criminal charges have been laid.
But in terms of like public information, are LAPD statements under lock and key? Are they personal information about some people? Or, I mean, I'm being a bit cheeky here, but like they did not. What he essentially said, what Musk said, is that he's going to ban accounts that post his real time location. Yes. I mean, sure. But then he banned accounts that were posting a police report pertaining to his real-time location, which did not dox him in real time. And that is obviously newsworthy, certainly falls under the category of what a journalist can cover ethically. And so we are in a very precarious situation here where, like, you know, I had this thought earlier, because you read about how he essentially has given Barry Weiss access to the Twitter. She has a badge. She's been coming in. She's been able to look through people's files as a part of this Twitter files wet fart of an expose, which isn't really an expose. And they're very similar people. Both are free speech champions as a part of their branding. But in reality, Barry Weiss became a prominent figure in media by advocating for the censorship of pro-Palestinian and Arab professors. That was what catapulted her to prominence. Now, Elon Musk is rebranding himself as Tesla's stock begins to dip, and as we see other car companies basically doing what Tesla does, but better, with electric vehicles like Mercedes and Porsche, and building luxury vehicles that are electric and are coming down the pike soon enough. He's getting desperate, needs to rebrand himself as a free speech warrior, and then he bans people who say things or repost things that that he disagrees with. They are really just twins, the two of them.
I don't know if anyone saw this, but Barry Weiss actually outflanked Glenn Greenwald when it came to free speech advocacy, because right now Glenn Greenwald is doing what I assumed he was going to mock everybody involved, especially like, you know, the corporate liberal journalists, but I didn't think he was going to be this malicious. But Glenn is basically trying to take the angle of, you reap what you sow. I'm not going to take the high road. Enjoy this, you know, liberal censorship advocates. Whereas Barry's like, I'm going to be honest. I don't know if this was the best call. This is still a form of censorship. I don't fully stand behind you, Elon. In terms of what's actually causing people to get banned, I mean, I don't think it's beyond the pale to suggest that it's people mocking Elon Musk at this point. From the very start that Elon Musk took over and he had that disastrous introduction of the Twitter Blue program where you could spend $8 to basically become any major corporation for a day and then say the worst things possible, which is just unbelievably amazing. He brought comedy back to Twitter. At that moment, people who were impersonating Elon Musk were the first ones to get roasted, like almost instantaneously. It took seconds. So, as much as I want to say that this is a case of Elon Musk enforcing laws or rules, which, if we're also being clear, these rules should apply directly to libs of TikTok. He's describing libs of TikTok. That's what Libs of TikTok is. Who posts the location data of someone in real time, an event, a teacher, a hospital, a doctor, a professor? Here's their location. Here's their address. Here's their email. Here's their phone number. They are molesting children. These are pedophiles. These are groomers. Do something about it. And then, lo and behold, the same day, stochastic terrorism occurs where a whole bunch of people are calling in bomb threats or death threats or all this kind of stuff. He's describing a rule that should apply very strictly to an account that, as we now know from the Twitter files, is protected. So,
well, let's talk about libs of TikTok then, because as you say, this account, which is a hate account that doxes regular people, has put out people's employment information, addresses, and called them groomers and pedophiles under the guise of some sort of, I don't know, reporting, but really it is a hate account that is trying to target trans and queer people throughout the country. And not the richest man on earth by posting where his private plane lands. I would imagine he has some security that makes him a bit okay. Teachers, regular people, just trying to live their lives. That's what this account does. Shouldn't that be in violation of the very rules that he has said that Twitter is in their bylaws at this point?
I mean, you would think that. The thing with libs of TikTok is that I want to get ahead of this because I get a lot of pushback from the right who say, oh, you don't like having cringe compilations. It's just people in their own words. What's the problem? The libs of TikTok, Chaya, is just exposing libs being cringe. And if it was just libs being cringe, I would have no issue with it. There's 1,000 cringe compilation YouTube channels, TikTok accounts. Have at it. Enjoy the cringe. Enjoy the 2016 SJW screaming because Trump won a million times over. It'll never get stale, right? It's the funniest meme in the world. Keep using it. It's the fact that she adds pedophile groomer to it, right? Like, this is a teacher who may go there and like, I'm non-binary, I use they them pronouns. That's the clip. And then it'll be like grooming children, specific example. I'm just like, no, this is not what grooming is. You're trying to redefine what grooming is, and it's very dangerous. This is a time-honored tradition to vilify and attack LGBTQ plus people. It's been done generation after generation. We can even Godwin's Law this. The Nazis used to do this, right? Like, you know how Tucker Carlson is like, just another day in Weimar. What he's referencing is, you know, prior to the Nazis coming into power, yes, they targeted LGBTQ plus people. They burnt a gender research facility / school down to the ground.
Yep.
They labeled the person who run it as one of the most dangerous Jews in Germany. These are time-honored tactics of trying to associate queer folk with pedophilia and grooming. And it's disgusting. And I think, if anything, what the Twitter files revealed was that libs of TikTok, despite the danger that she clearly posed to hospitals, teachers, doctors, etc., she was still being protected. The account still had do not terminate on the very top without speaking to the highest levels of security because of the implications of actually deleting an account of that size.
I mean, and you just need to see the trends of who is being reinstated and who is being banned. You have Baked Alaska, white supremacists being reinstated. You have the guy who writes the is the head of the Daily Stormer. I'm blanking on his name. What's it, Bradley?
Andrew Anglim
being reinstated. But Keith Olbermann, Aaron Rupar, who's just a dude who's a lib who reposts like
cable news,
being banned, and Matt Binder and stuff like that. I mean, and then we're talking about free speech here. This is a moment where One of the major online communications platforms has been hijacked and immediately tilted in a way where it's beginning to become a right-wing propaganda vehicle.
Flooded with neo-reactionaries, neo-Nazis, alt-right accounts, all the old ones from yonder. I'll be honest with you, Emma, I love free speech. I'm for it. I love the marketplace of ideas where the highest level ideas raised, like all that. I'm all for it. That's why Twitter's kind of unique. If I wanted a like Mastodon, safe space, I would have joined a forum or something like that. Like I enjoy the ability that Twitter gave me to be able to, battle in the mud, you know, with a lot of, people that I disagree with. The thing is though, when they brag about, say, the First Amendment, the First Amendment is in place to protect the press from the government passing legislation that would limit their speech. That's the purpose of it. That's the entire point, and that's beautiful. You should have that. It's necessary to free and open democracy to be able to criticize your leaders. You should be able to make fun of Joe Biden, call him corn pop or whatever you want, and not worry about, you know, your door getting kicked in or something like that because you've done it, right? In case of this, this is exactly what I think people on the left have always been describing as the problem with monopolies under capitalism. These are dictatorships. They always have been. It was a dictatorship before Elon Musk, and they just ran it as a business. It's a dictatorship under Elon Musk, and he's running it as a playground. In both cases, the problem is the corporate dictatorship dictating the thing that controls the public forum and the speech. That's the issue. Doesn't matter if Elon Musk is showing everybody that the meritocracy isn't real. Doesn't matter if it's, Jack Dorsey trying to make it as both sanitary and advertiser friendly at the same time as he wants. It's the same problem.
Yeah. If they really go down this road of subscription model, then it's very much over. It's like, could not be more over. It's democratizing, but here you can only get into this if you pay $8.
I also just want to bring up, like, there's this thing that, like, the Silicon Valley puppets, Barry Weiss and those sorts of folks are mm-hmm. doing to try to, she says the old regime is governed by its whims and the old regime at Twitter governed by its own whims and biases, and it sure looks like the new regime has the same problem. I oppose it in both cases. This
the
idea,
new regime, she's literally in the fucking like offices right.
But I'm sorry, regime.
This idea that the old moderation decisions were at all comparable to this sort of stuff, I think, is ludicrous. And like, who should be making these decisions? That's like Michael Schellenberger ended his sort of thread on that. And I think, like, it should be the employees of Twitter should be more empowered than, like, a new boss who bought the thing. And it's difficult when you start, like, sort of firing everybody at all. But, like, when these moderation decisions happen, like, to me, it's interesting to zoom in and see, like, what's actually happening in that company. Like, when the Trump and Facebook thing, for instance, a lot of the employees wanted to retaliate or discipline Trump for saying when the looting starts, the shooting starts. And Zuckerberg's like, I don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a staff problem. And so, like, that's, like, we never really focus on that part of it. Like, what workers are being forced by bosses to, like, carry certain speech? Like, look, I think, like, workers should support, like Lance said, the free exchange of ideas. But I also think, like, when they decide to put their foot down about what's going out on their platform that they're helping to produce, I think that's where it's more interesting to me. And that is completely obscured for talk of, like, oh, is the government actually forcing these social networks to do this? That's too simplistic of a way to look at these.
And this is how you can tell they're authoritarian, is because they pretend that a billionaire coming in and making unilateral decisions about content is democracy. But what happened before, and that's what the Twitter files expose, were complex deliberations between employees who were trying to make decisions based on their terms of service about whether a guy like Trump, who they were very reluctant to ban, would remain on their platform.
Or like libs at TikTok, who the Twitter files showed us had a mark on their account saying, hey, you know how you would normally moderate people who was doing this stuff? Actually, don't do that and levitate this to people above. I mean, that's the most damning thing about these entire revelations. And it's the opposite emphasis to the ones that these people want to present.
We should also point out just the, like, rank and file hypocrisy that is going on right now. Like, it really does come down to, this was never about free speech. They thought that Twitter was run by a bunch of, like, I don't know, pink-haired SJW elves who were just, you know, controlling everything and trying to censor every single right-wing belief. And at the end of the day, what it really came down to was that they were running it like a business. They were doing that fine balance between we want to kind of have as much free speech as we can, but we also want to create a advertiser-friendly, safe experience. This is the weird, you know, dance that we do. It's very complex, it's difficult, but that's what we're trying to do. And as soon as Elon came in, it's like, well, this is basically, if it was a lot more transparent that just one person is focusing on what offends him. Like, he just wanted, he paid $44 billion to become the head mod of a website. That's what really happened.
Right.
Right. Should we play some of this stuff with Lance, some of the sound that we have on Elon Musk here?
Is this a gotcha?
What'd you say?
I thought this was a gotcha. Yeah. Some clips of Lance. Yeah. I was like, oh, well, here we go.
We've had our researchers go back into early Lance streams.
Yes. We actually learned that from you. We copied you with Matt Walsh, and now we're doing it to you, Lance.
So here's Lance in his car in 2013.
Yeah. Saying everything problematic possible. But actually, what's good to play with him here from this Twitter sound? Do we know?
Talk about the poll.
Oh, the poll. That is what I wanted to do. So you saw this, I'm sure, Lance, here, where, so Elon, Vox Populi, Vox Dei, right? Mr. Democracy. Oh. Commissioned a Twitter poll.
This is fascinating, because we could see a billionaire sort of experiment with democracy in real time and see sort of how it suits him.
And not like the results and then change it?
Yes, the time-honored results that we've all seen with this sort of scientific experiment.
That's the democracy I create. he commissioned this Twitter poll and he said, like, all right, here, let the people speak. Should I unsuspend accounts who doxed my exact location in real time? I think pollsters might have an issue with
the loaded language.
The loaded language, yeah. Right? Not exactly scientific, but look what won there. Now, 43%.
Yeah, this moron realized he put too many against the one that he wanted to lose.
Yeah, so he gave too many options. He said, sorry, too many options. We'll redo poll. Because he didn't make it a binary. So what were the choices? Can you scroll up there again? Yeah. The choices were now, which... that's called a plurality. 43% said, 4.5% said tomorrow, 14.4 7 days from now, 38.1 said longer, and he was like, I didn't put the full permanent ban up there.
And so Elon, like, to his credit, can do math.
Yeah.
And so he sees 43% plus 4.5%. Okay, that's 47.5%. And then he sees 14% plus 38%. And he's like, damn, I fucked this up.
Oh, we need to redo it. That's over 50. The max I can do is 7 days. So... new Twitter poll. Turns out, didn't work much better for him.
Loses in the runoff.
I mean, unsuspend accounts. 58.6 say now. 41.4% says unsuspend them in 7 days. And then he did it again. Redid it again, right?
Oh, did he?
I thought he did. Well,
I thought there was just two, but I was like,
I'm wrong. Yeah.
He was posting through it all night last night. And like, part of me was both like so furious about Binder being deleted for no reason. And also at the same time, I was like, keep going, please.
Yeah.
Please keep going. This is so glorious.
Keep tweeting through it.
Yeah. Tweet through it.
But what's also ridiculous is that his decision making about these accounts, which by the way, did the Binder, the CNN reporter, all the journalists that got suspended didn't dox his location in real time. We should say that. But he, do we know the status of the ban? It's just indefinite?
He said in a couple of follow-up tweets or, you know, responding to people that these are temporary suspensions. And I think he said in the case of one person, but not specifying Matt Binder, that it was going to be 7 days. He's like, taking 7 days off Twitter is good for the soul or something like that.
Oh, thanks,
he should probably take that advice. Yeah. He's like, my product's actually very bad for you. So he should just go to a meditation retreat. He should take some time.
You know, to Lance's point about the previous moderation regime was really like geared towards profit. It is funny how, like, the WNBA conversation is similar. We talked about this, Emma. Like, the NBA isn't like, say, subsidizing the WNBA because they just love wokeness and equality. They're doing it because that's a giant market that they could potentially open a women basketball that is actually, like, proven, for instance, why women basketball players are going to play overseas is there is money in it.
Yes.
The market has proven it. They just want to develop that here, right? It is a, it's not because they just hate your sort of, like, traditional paternalistic values. It's that that stuff gets in the way of money.
Wokeness, when they say, you know, Disney's going woke and the it's because the left has infiltrated their values, are you kidding me? They, you see how Disney in particular censors same-sex scenes so that they can get a broader national international audience, but when they do make for like Marvel movies or whatever, but when they do make those choices, it's because they're trying to appeal to certain demographics and people who haven't gotten representation. These are all cold-blooded financial decisions, not some, like, nefarious liberal agenda, naturally.
They're also not courageous at all. I mean, they'll take, like, a little teeny scene where it's like, well, it's implied that this person may be a homosexual, and then that gets edited out in foreign markets. Like, it's like a little 2 seconds clip that I can easily cut out to be able to make more profit in yet another market.
Yeah. Exactly. All right. Well, let's talk a bit about Matt Walsh, because you are doing God's work, Lance, watching old Matt Walsh clips when his, you know, he hadn't quite gotten the whole personal grooming thing down to where he's at. I mean, his beard is substantial now. He was going with the newsboy cap scruff situation at that point. And then doing his videos from his car. What compelled you to go through his old work like this? Because, what, just his rampant transphobia? Because we were just saying we should do that more for right-wing pundits, because there's a trove of information that's valuable.
You're not wrong. I was streaming one day, because I stream over at twitch.tv/thesurfsTV. I should do a self-promo.
Yeah,
I was
very smooth, and, very smooth.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Shameless. Yeah. I'm scrolling through all his old videos because someone was trying to say that in one of his old videos, he actually used to broadcast out of his car. And I was like, that's not true. No one did that. And then turns out that's true. His entire first, like, I'd say 3 months of doing YouTubing was all out of his vehicle. I don't know if it was an aesthetic he was going for, because he was also working for the Daily Wire at the time. But the topics alone of each thumbnail had me going like, oh, this has to have something in there, because it was like, we have to talk about the age of consent. We have to talk about how impregnation, abortion, of incest hides evidence. We have to talk about, like, all these topics. I was like, well, no, we don't. No one has to talk about this. Like, you shouldn't really be thinking these things, let alone thinking, now I need to say them out loud and record and broadcast them on main. Either way, as I downloaded them, and these are all from 4 years ago, I was astonished at how horrifying the things that were coming out of his mouth were. And this was Matt Walsh. I already knew Matt Walsh was bad, but, like, this is Matt Walsh unfiltered and unfamous, where his views are like 893, 1K, 700 for, like, each video. So this was before anyone knew who he was. And so at that point, I guess he felt a lot more secure expressing his very, I don't even know if you can say these are Christian nationalist beliefs. Some of these are like, this is old timey religion.
Fair.
This is
Old
Testament,
fair.
You know?
Yeah.
This is like, is there any other right wing personality right now who is advocating for, if a daughter has been raped by her father, the evidence of the rape needs to be conceived, and then she has to give birth in order to prove that the father raped her? Is anyone else saying something that horrifying? And if you think about the logistics, it's like, so she has to continue to be raped and molested for 9 months until the evidence is created and then birth? Why are you thinking this, let alone recording this in your car outside of what looks like a playground? I don't know what's happening. The aesthetics are more fine. The whole thing.
But, I mean, that's what, why that's so important to emphasize is that these guys are all religious fundamentalists. Ben Shapiro, Matt Walsh. But it's not cool to be a religious fundamentalist. In fact, a lot of young people who would be inclined to watch your content don't really want that branding. They might be more sucked in by traditionalism, or masculinity is leaving our spaces and everyone's a soy boy. But it's all really the same thing. It's just branded a bit differently. And so when you go back and Matt Walsh, a little more unpolished, a little bit more Christian nationalist-y, you can kind of see that the homophobia, the transphobia, the misogyny is really rooted in something that fundamentally, no pun intended, people do not want.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And when it comes to Matt Walsh, he really made a name for himself with the transphobia, like you were just bringing up, right? We should have said that Matt Walsh is one of the most deeply boring pundits on the right, without question. He is without parallel. Like, I have sat through entire hour-long streams that he has, and he is very difficult to sit through, which is why I have a personal belief he ramps up the horrifying rhetoric a bit more than other people. Like, some people will be like, well, you know, I think if someone's trans and adult, they should be able to make their own decisions, whereas Matt Walsh is like, trans people shouldn't exist, they're chemically castrating your children, they're mutilating young boys. He really takes things a couple extra notches. And it should also be pointed out that he is a fundamentalist in his ideology, because I say this, like, I'm sure y'all saw when he was on the Joe Rogan podcast and that, like, divine light of Jamie came on for that moment where he was like, how many people do you think are on puberty blockers? Oh, I have to say at this point, maybe millions, if not more. And just like, you know, that light comes on and it's like less than 1,000 in a year. That's an order of magnitude of what, 44 times around there that you're exaggerating. And instead of correcting himself because he was presented with facts and, you know, he cares about his feelings, at that moment he's like, well, Media Matters is going to have, you know, a hell of a time with this. Like, I have information presented to me, but I'm not going to change the fact that I lie for a career, and my lies for a career directly vilify and marginalize and impact the lives of people who are already having a hard time. They're already having a very hard time in life, and I'm going to do this for money, for pay, which is it's disgusting.
It is. Thank God Spotify's lawyers got a little involved there. Said, Jamie, you don't need to be ornamental. Just do some fact checking here, because we're getting a little bit in trouble with Joe Rogan saying that he definitely knows somebody secondhand who is a teacher, and they have
litter boxes.
They have litter boxes. That was the impetus, I think.
Yeah. No, that's, yeah. And then that's so ridiculous, because that story is a great example of a feedback loop. We have a story that was actually propagated by Libs of TikTok originally. Obviously, Libs of TikTok and Joe Rogan, Joe Rogan has said before, he promotes Libs of TikTok, likes watching Libs of TikTok. He sees that story on Libs of TikTok. The school debunks the story, says that's not true. In fact, the photos you see of the cat litter boxes, this is really sad, but those are in place in case there's a school shooting. That's why we have that, in case the kids can't leave the room. Anyways, Joe Rogan sees that, and then he makes up a story in real time where he's like, my wife's friend apparently saw the litter boxes or whatever. He got this from Libs of TikTok, and then Libs of TikTok posted that Joe Rogan confirmed her story. Like, it's the Ouroboros of transphobia, and you know, it's ridiculous.
And he changed it to making it like a personal anecdote because he thought that it would have more salience that way. So that's how you know, not honest guy shooting off the cuff there. All right. Well, Lance from the Surfs, thank you so much for coming on today. Really appreciate you. And also deep dives into Matt Walsh. That is, difficult work. I'll say that. Lance, where can people find, your work?
If you enjoy anything that you've seen or heard, you can find me everywhere. Social media is sold at at the Surfs TV. Yeah, at the Surfs TV. Everywhere on social media. Probably not Twitter for long. And on that note, hashtag Free Binder.
And speaking of that man, our good friend Matt Binder will be joining us after the break. Be right back. We are back with somebody, just kidding, friend of ours, Matt Binder, who's now in Twitter jail and is busy doing a bunch of media appearances this morning. So thanks for coming on, Binder. Damn, been an eventful 24 hours, huh?
Yeah, it's been certainly something else. I mean, I can confirm that Elon Musk knows who I am. I mean, that's without a doubt.
All right. So what happened? How did this all play out yesterday?
Yeah, sure. So I'm on Twitter yesterday after playing a game of Lego Star Wars on Xbox with my son. He goes to bed. I'm on my phone. I'm looking, scrolling through Twitter, and I see CNN's Donnie O'Sullivan share out a statement he received from the LAPD, the Los Angeles Police Department. And the statement basically says that we've heard about what Elon Musk has said. Elon Musk had said the previous night allegedly his family was accosted by someone while they were in their car. We don't know what happened. He tweeted out a video of someone in his group videoing a guy in a car, and that's all we know. That's all we've seen. And the LAPD statement says we've heard about this. We've reached out to Elon Musk. We've not heard back, and there has been no police report up until we haven't received a report of anything. And so Donnie O'Sullivan from CNN shared this. I immediately saw this and I thought it was very interesting information, especially if he's saying he's going to sue somebody, like he says he's going to sue the creator of that Elon's Jet account that tracks his jet. You need to very well have a police report for the documentation at the very least. So I thought this was very newsworthy. So I shared it. Immediately after I quote tweeted it, I noticed that it wasn't showing up because turns out Donnie O'Sullivan of CNN got suspended moments after. So because it was still open on my screen, I took a screenshot and I added additional information that I thought was also newsworthy. Moments after posting this tweet, Donnie O'Sullivan from CNN was suspended. And I added his tweet, embedded into the tweet. And then I think the last tweet I shot out was one right after that, where I noticed that Ryan Mack from the New York Times, who's also been on the Elon Musk beat, was also suspended. And I tweeted about that. And then next thing I know, I refresh my, my page, and it's telling me that I'm permanently suspended from Twitter.
Permanently.
It says permanently suspended. That's what the prompt I see says. Now, Elon Musk is out there saying differently, but he has a poll right now going that he's asking if the journalist should be unsuspended now, as in when the poll ends tonight, or in 7 days. But it should be noted that right before he made that poll, there was a previous poll that ended last night that he ran for an hour that asked that same question but with more options. And now won again, last night. And he said, no, I gave you too many options. Let's redo the poll.
Yeah, I know. We just showed that with Lance from The Surf. So it's just hilarious to me how, first of all, his polling methodology suspect, right? Very leading questions. Didn't get the answer he wanted. Then second poll, also still saying reinstate them. So everybody that I've seen who's supposedly a free speech absolutist has basically said, this might not be right. I mean, Greenwald's included in this, but this is what the liberals wanted, and they're getting exactly what they wanted. But everything that I've seen has been, the liberals just essentially wanted some sensible moderation policies. But this is not that. You are a reporter. You write for Mashable. This is your beat. This kind of stuff. And the police report in this instance is just inherently newsworthy. There's no other argument that can be made about it.
Right. I mean, Musk is claiming that we all doxed the location data.
Assassination
that Elon's
coordinates.
Jet, yes. That's what he's been calling it. That Elon's jet used to tweet out. But it should be noted that Elon's jet never even broke Twitter's policies, because Musk previously said in November that he would not ban Elon's jet to show how much he valued free speech, because he viewed it as free speech. And then all of a sudden on Wednesday, Elon's jet, the Twitter account, and the creator's Twitter account, Jack Sweeney, a 20-year-old college kid in Florida, both of them were suspended. At that moment, they were still not breaking Twitter policy, because it wasn't until hours later did Musk announce a new Twitter policy about posting location data on Twitter. And he never unsuspended Jack Sweeney or Elon's jet in order for them to even abide by that policy. Literally, I'm going to tell you on the Majority Report that this is like the Minority Report. Elon's jet was suspended for a policy that didn't exist until the future. And so, I mean, literally, that's the case here.
Yeah.
And so,
after he made a point, as you say, to say, this is fine. So just, you know, Elon's jet doing what Elon Musk from the horse's mouth said was okay gets banned. And right. then it's and should, assassination yeah. coordinates time, like he's some sort of Jack Ryan figure.
Right. And so, you know, I should also say that, I haven't posted any location data, even based on the new Twitter rules. I never tweeted anything from that account. I never retweeted anyone sharing the location data with that account. So I don't know what it is that ran afoul of Twitter's policies. Now, previously, under the old Twitter administration, if it was a single tweet of yours that ran afoul of Twitter's policies, they would temporarily put your account on a hold. You would get an email immediately with the offending tweet asking you to delete it because it broke this policy or whatever. Elon Musk, as someone who said that he would not have actions done on entire accounts for infringements, he would just have specific tweets, being taken down or reach limited. He did not do that. He outright suspended an account, multiple accounts, for what they're claiming are individual tweets. I don't even know what those tweets are. Tell me what they are. I would love to know. If I somehow broke Twitter policy that wasn't don't offend or criticize Elon Musk, then I would have been happy to delete that tweet to be within Twitter's policy. As long as that policy makes sense from a fair standpoint. If it's simply he doesn't like, you know, me tweeting about his comments about Tesla while he was selling off Tesla stock, if he doesn't like me pointing out that, he's an advocate for free speech, yet he's banning accounts for, and he said he would run Twitter moderation based on what is legal in the United States, and he's not doing that. If he doesn't like me pointing that out, then we're going to have a problem there because that's not okay policy to say. I mean, he can technically just suspend me. He can suspend anyone he wants. That's the thing a lot of, I guess, conservatives or the naysayers who don't mind that, these accounts were suspended. They're like, oh, you always say it's a private company. Well, yeah, my logic holds. That's legit. I'm not changing my mind because it happened to me. Elon Musk is obviously well within his right to run his platform however he'd like. I'm simply pointing out that he is misrepresenting how he's running his platform to the public. He claims he's going to make it more transparent and bring more free speech to the platform. And he's quite frankly done the opposite. I don't know how anyone can argue anything differently. I mean, even Barry Weiss, I know she's been hedging a little bit, but even in that first tweet I saw her post about it, she even said that what Elon Musk is basically no different from her complaints about the old regime. I mean, he was supposed to come in and change things. At the very worst, he's censoring just like the old regime did. I mean, he's the one who sold himself as something better and different, and he's not delivered.
Well, she also sells herself as a free speech advocate when she got her start by basically getting pro-Palestinian Arab professors ousted. So she does not have much leg to stand on there either. But point being, it's indefensible even from those kinds of ghouls. And he's put Baked Alaska back on Twitter, white supremacist, the head of the Daily Stormer, which is a white supremacist publication. But Matt Binder, New York Times reporters, CNN reporters banned. And you can just, like, I keep thinking back to that New York Times piece from last week where they were like, it's hard to pin down Elon Musk's politics. This, what I just said right there, is that enough to pin that down?
I just want to add to NYC Southbound Twitter, a great reporter at Business Insider who published an important investigation on Tesla. It looks like Lynette Lopez also suspended this afternoon.
Mm. There you go.
For what did she? What?
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, here's
Tesla,
the thing.
This was an old article. Tesla knew its Model S battery had a design flaw that could lead to leaks and ultimately fires starting in 2012, and that journalist is suspended.
For tweeting that out. Interesting. Wow.
Not sure. No, that's an old article, so I'm not sure what the precipitating event was here.
Well, right. Binder, if I see tweets from someone named Libtard2, I'm just gonna.
Listen,
it could be you. Could not be
I've
you.
Actually, The funny thing is, I don't know if you guys saw this, but last night I found a loophole, a legal loophole, because I didn't do anything that Twitter didn't provide me with. I found a loophole where there was a Twitter space last night that was run by Katie Nadopoulos of BuzzFeed.
We have that. Yeah,
there was a bunch of journalists in there. And I'm in read-only mode. That's what happens when you get suspended. You can see the tweets from the people you follow. You just can't see any of your mentions. You can't tweet. You can't see your DMs. So I was able to see this Twitter space was live because I guess people that I follow were in it. So I was like, okay, let's test this out. Let's see. So I clicked it and all of a sudden I could hear it. I was like, that's weird. And then I see my little avatar show up in like the little room that they show, like they show the avatars of all the people who are listening. I'm like, that's crazy. And then lo and behold, there was the little button that says request mic. And I was like, no way. So I pressed request mic and I'm like, hello, can you hear me? And everyone was like, oh my God, what? And the loophole was that if you were banned on Twitter, for some reason, you weren't blocked from entering and talking in a Twitter space.
Mm.
And so I was in there and, you know, ban evasion is against the rules, but I wasn't ban evading. I have not set up any account. I haven't even tweeted from the account of my shows like Scam Economy or Doomed. I'm doing this by the books. I simply went into that Twitter space because that was a feature, just like I can see my feed. Twitter Space was a feature that Twitter provided to my suspended account. So I was just using it. Eventually, and interestingly enough, right before Elon Musk himself entered that Twitter Space, I was also blocked from Twitter Space, Twitter Spaces. But, yeah. Shortly after, by the way, Twitter completely took down Twitter Spaces. So I guess, I don't know, Twitter, I'm sorry, or
you're
welcome.
It's because they have no engineers.
Twitter Spaces is a mess. I have to say, like, the night that everyone was joining Mastodon, Elon was on a Twitter Space with, like, some crypto loser. And I joined that just to hear what he was talking about. And then I couldn't leave the space. Like, I would click the leave button, and it would just, like, minimize to the bottom of my thing. And I had to uninstall and reinstall Twitter. That's happened. I've joined four spaces. That's happened twice.
Yeah.
And I was able to get out of the one that Binder was on without having to uninstall and reinstall the app.
So we have him popping in, Elon Musk popping into the Twitter space with very own Matt Binder.
All Binder, right. You're out of the space at this point.
Oh.
By this point, I'm. You might still see my avatar because it just shut down on me when I tried to re-enter. An old Periscope.tv link would show up. Remember Periscope, their video platform?
Yeah.
And it would say, you're banned from this Twitter space. So Twitter spaces must be built into Periscope.
Yeah.
And that's probably why the ban on just a Twitter account didn't automatically ban you on Twitter spaces. Because I guess mm-hmm. they had to then go in and ban my old Periscope account as well.
Because it's still Periscope on the back end.
Ah, all right, here we go.
In the last few hours with a handful of journalists being banned.
As I'm sure everyone who's been doxed and would agree, showing real-time information about somebody's location is inappropriate, and I think everyone on this call would not like that to be done to them. And there is not going to be any distinction in the future between journalists, so-called journalists, and regular people. Everyone's going to be treated the same. You're not special because you're a journalist. You're a citizen.
You're Twitter.
No special treatment. You get suspended.
You could hear him typing in the background, and I'm almost positive he was making that first poll while he was typing.
Yeah.
And that's probably why he wasn't happy with it, because he wasn't, giving it his whole attention to be able to realize that he didn't want to give so many options. But he was totally typing and posting that poll in the background while he was talking in that Twitter space.
We don't put to them. And there is not going to be any distinction in the future between journalists, so-called journalists, and regular people. Everyone's going to be treated the same. You're not special because you're a journalist. You're a citizen. No special treatment. You dox, you get suspended.
A genius in a story. At work here.
Ban evasion. Ban evasion or trying to be clever about it. Like, I posted a link to the real-time information. It's obviously that is obviously simply trying to evade the meaning. That is, there's no different from than actually showing real time information.
So when you're saying posting a link to it, I mean, some of the people like Drew and Ryan Mack from the New York Times who were banned were, you know, they were reporting on it in the course of sort of pretty normal journalistic endeavors. You consider that like a tricky attempt at ban evasion?
You show the link to the real-time information, ban evasion, obviously.
Drew, I don't think you were posting the real-time information, right?
I mean, well, you're suggesting that we're sharing your address, which is not true. And you're suggesting that we're posting. We never. I never posted your address.
You posted a link to the address.
We posted a link. In the course of reporting about Elon Jet, we posted links to Elon Jet, which are now not online and now banned on Twitter. And Twitter also, of course, marks even the Instagram and Mastodon accounts of Elon Jet as harmful. Using, you know, we have to acknowledge using the same exact link blocking technique that you have criticized as part of the Hunter Biden New York Post story in 2020. So what is different here and
it's
there?
No more acceptable for me. It's no more acceptable for me, for you, than it is for me. Same thing. So anyway.
So it's unacceptable what you're doing?
No. What you dox, you get suspended, end of story. That's it.
Elon, I have to ask.
Is he like mentally on like incapable of understanding information?
At that point, after he says that he left the space, so Katie Natopoulos didn't even.
Oh my god!
He says you docs, you get suspended. That's it. Then he left the space because he got questioned.
And what
that.
Binder did was even less, like even another order removed from what he's talking about here, which is you posted the LAPD report on it. Did you even link to Elon Jet?
I mean, no, I did not. That's the last thing I posted. Again, I don't know. I mean, now hearing what Drew said, I did point out that the New York Post thing was the same thing he was doing to the other links. I did not post the link, a hyperlink on Twitter, though.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, though. This is exactly what the Twitter files were supposed to expose. The suppression of free speech of the Hunter Biden nudes that were like five separate links requested by the Biden administration. What's worse? The removal of revenge porn because a campaign asks for it, or when the CEO of a company makes a unilateral decision to ban journalists from their platform because they decide to report on him? What's worse?
Yeah, I mean, Who knows? Again, if
where's Taibbi been on this, by the way? I haven't heard.
I don't think he said anything, has he?
I mean, I think it's the most damning thing, I feel like, beyond just like the general aspect of the banning of these reporters and you, Binder, is the link blocking from other accounts literally being what all of the hullabaloo about the New York Post story from 2020 is about. And
right.
Like if anything is going to lay bare that this is not in any way, shape or form about besides anything about Elon's own reactionary right wing politics, it's this. Mm-hmm. He doesn't actually care about the policy or the terms of service or anything like that. This is all in service to him. It's like, even it's now seeped into, I mean, I don't think it's not seeped in before, but like, this is just lib-owning for Elon Musk, as it was for Donald Trump. It's mm-hmm. just, none of it actually matters. It's just,
I mean,
him putting himself in place of, he's now the most important guy, and that's the point.
The old Twitter, when they blocked that New York Post link to the Hunter Biden article, something which I said at the very beginning, the second they did it, that it was wrong. They shouldn't have done that. But even then, they just blocked that specific link. You were still able to read and share other New York Post articles. Elon Musk is now blocking every single link to any Mastodon-related page. It's an entire social network where you can't post a link to your own account. You can't post a link to a specific post on your own account. He's just outright blocking an entire competitor.
Yeah, that's doxing, though. I mean, come on. If you have competition in the marketplace, that's doxing. So that's what I've heard. I'm joking.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Binder, thanks for coming on. I know you have a million media appearances today. So
Binder, no problem.
What's your best guess on when you'll be back on Twitter?
Yeah.
I can't say. I mean, judging by that poll, it could be tonight. Judging by what Elon Musk decides, it could be in 7 days. It could be never. Right. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. I mean, you know, I got to imagine that just from a strictly business standpoint, just judging from the blowback and even sort of reaction from anyone who isn't in the, you know, Elon Musk fan bubble.
Partnership? Okay.
It's been totally, I mean, like you said earlier, that the poll question is super leading to make it seem like everyone he suspended are horrible people. And he's still losing the new poll, like his preferred, obviously, choice is losing more than it was even in the previous poll that he put out. That, you know, that where it lost, where his preferred choice is lost. You know, I got to imagine that there are businesses who are certainly looking at this and adding this to the list of reasons why we need to be very cautious about even getting involved with Twitter. So, you know, even from that standpoint, it's got to be hurting him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in the pocketbook, in his pocketbook, at least. All right. Well, Matt Bender, we will see you next week. But
I just say.
Yeah.
YouTube.com/Matt Bender, everybody. Mm-hmm. Please go subscribe there. And of course, you know, this could maybe hopefully lead to me being able to do more stuff. So if you can become a paying subscriber over at the Patreon, patreon.com/Matt Bender. I mean, you know, this only really, you know, invigorates me to continue doing what I'm doing. You know, what is the Obi-Wan Kenobi quote in Star Wars A New Hope? Strike me down and I'll become more powerful than ever before.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Let's go.
Binda, this feels, we're very proud of you here. And this reminds me of when Sam was reinstated at MSNBC and we played We Ain't Going Nowhere by P. Diddy.
Yeah.
I know you're not reinstated yet, but I mean, I feel the same energy.
We have that locked and loaded for when that eventually
happens.
Well,
you used to be able to play it back then and they wouldn't copyright you, and now you can't do that. But
yeah. All right. Yeah, the internet just getting sadder by the day. The free speech under attack. Binder, I will also be on Doomed on Tuesday.
Tuesday,
people should
yes.
check that out. On YouTube.com/Matt Binder, Patreon.com/Matt Binder. Thanks so much, Binder, for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
All right, Binder. See you later. All right, with that, we are going to head into the fun half. We won't be taking calls today. Just, you know, we had to get Binder on. Packed show. So, first, though, Matt, what is happening over on Left Reckoning?
This weekend for Left Reckoning patrons, I'm talking to Kelsey Atherton, who wrote an article on a little bit of wider context for this nuclear fusion breakthrough, which is, you know, inspiring or I guess maybe hopeful, but also the motivation was to make sure our nuclear bombs can go off. that's why we were researching that. So we're going to be getting into Livermore Labs and Los Alamos and why we can only seem to have major breakthroughs like this in service of researching ways that could potentially destroy the entire planet. So patreon.com/leftreckoning to get access to that.
And on YouTube.com/ESVN show, Bradley and I spoke a little bit more about the Zach Wilson saga, where I'm on an island alone, essentially saying that the Jets have committed malpractice against their quarterback, no matter how unlikable he might be. Reminder, Ben Roethlisberger wasn't very likable either. But they have tanked their asset, but he's also now being forced to start for them on Sunday, which is a very fascinating dynamic. And then we talked a little bit about the World Cup on Saturday, the final between Argentina and France, as well as gave our picks against the spread. Bradley and I still in like a deadlocked two-game differential. And he's already won. I knew I should have taken that Thursday night game. I literally, in the middle of the show, I have a panic attack about it, basically. So check that out for fun. YouTube.com/ESPN show. All right. See you in the fun half. Bye-bye.
You are in for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Are you ready?
Oh, yeah. Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 boy is back, and the alpha males are back, back.
just as delicious as you could imagine.
The alpha males are back. And the alpha males are back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back.
I take all of it to my throat.
Alpha males are back.
Snowflake says what?
The alpha males are back.
You are a madman.
And the alpha males are back.
Oh no, Sam Cedar, what a fucking nightmare.
Bring back DJ Dinner.
Yeah, or a couple of them, just put them in rotation.
DJ Dinner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough for the breaks.
That's fucking nonsense.
See, white people doing drugs, they look worse than normal white people, and all white people look disgusting.
And the alpha males,
psych. Fuck them.
Snowflake says what?
What?
Snowflake says what?
A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank. Okay. I'm making stupid money. A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank.
Lives matter.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back. And the Africans are black African. And the alpha males are black. And the Africans are back.
When you see Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keeping it 100.
Can't knock the hustle.
Come on! Fuck them. Things I do for the bigger game plan. By the way, it's my birthday! Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back. Africans are black. Alpha males are black. Africans are back.
Come on. Come on. Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total.
Pussy.